I have the great joy of being a partner in Beauty from Ashes, which is a ministry that looks at inner healing. We look at inner and emotional healing in all sorts of different ways, preconception to 10 seconds ago. But actually, that isn't the word that is on my heart for tonight at all. I was thinking I would bring a word out of that, but that's not what I have. What I have is Jesus as the bridegroom. What I have is the bridegroom. And in that very famous letter that he wrote, Benjamin Franklin said, there are two things that are certain in life, death and taxes. But actually, there is something certain in your future, and that is a wedding. So whether you're married, or you've been married four times, like these guys, because they just can't get enough of marrying each other, or whether you've never been married, whether you're married and you wish you weren't married, or whatever, there is a wedding in your future. There's a wedding in your future. And just for a minute, I love it when she does that, don't you? Just for a minute, let's imagine that we could rewrite a verse of the Gospel of John. Just for a minute, okay? And supposing that in our rewritten version of the Gospel of John, Jesus said to us, I will love you for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. Yet we would straight away understand, wouldn't we, that he was talking about weddings, he was talking about marriage. And actually, Jesus talked all the time in wedding language. We just don't recognize it because it's not the wedding language that we know. But the whole of Jesus' conversation was laced through and through with weddings, with marriages, with brides and with bridegrooms. So I'm just going to talk, not for long, two and a half hours, not long, just about some of the things that you know Jesus said these, but just to kind of build some of the meaning behind them that shows us how his whole heart is to talk about weddings. Now, Jewish culture and tradition is very different to ours. So when a young man kind of thought he was getting to that marrying time, and maybe he kind of thought, well, you know, that's kind of a likely person for me, he would tell his father would approach the bride's father, they'd have a long discussion. The bride at this stage wouldn't know anything about it. They didn't tell her at this point. So they would have a long discussion, and then they would draw up a marriage contract. And if you haven't heard Ian Clayton's teaching on the marriage contract, the ketubah, then, as Ian would say, get the CD, because you need to hear that. But they would come together, and they would agree a marriage contract. And part of that contract would be the bride price that the young man's family were going to pay to the family of the bride. And part of that was to repay her father for the cost of bringing her up. But part of it was to show how much he loved her. So they would draw up this contract. And then they would all get together, and this was probably the first time they let the bride in on what was happening. Yeah? So the bridegroom's family, the bride's family, they all got together. And the copies of the unsigned marriage contract would be on the table in front of them. And at this point, the bride actually has a choice. Glory. Angel choirs. At this point, we will be joined by angel choirs. At this point, the bride has a choice. Because the bridegroom would pour a cup of wine. And the reason that he poured a cup of wine was it was symbolic of a blood covenant. So he would offer his bride the cup of wine. And if she was going to accept his proposal, she would drink of the cup to seal the contract. So on that last Passover night, when Jesus was with his disciples and he poured the cup and said, drink this, what he was actually doing was making a marriage proposal to the church, to us, to you, to me. He was offering the cup of wine to say, will you have me? Will you take me? Will you? Will you? So if the bride took the cup and drank it, then he was a happy bunny. And the contracts would then be signed and the bride price would be exchanged. The bride's groom would give to the bride's father the bride price. And then the bridegroom had to go away and he had to build a room onto his father's house to take his bride for their honeymoon. And according to the rabbinical tradition, he had to build it himself. You couldn't call in your local building supplier. He had to build it himself. So it could take anything from 1 to 5 years, depending on how wealthy the family were and how easy it was for them to pay for materials. So as the bride took the cup in to symbolize her agreement of the wedding contract, the bridegroom would say to her, I go to prepare a place for you. When it is ready, I will come back for you. So when Jesus says, I'm going to prepare a place for you, everyone that heard him would have instantly understood he was going to build the honeymoon room. He was going to build the honeymoon room. A lot of glory on the honeymoon room. I know you guys are like seriously religious, so I'll give you a text. Psalm 25:14 in the Passion Translation says, there is a secret place reserved for the lovers of God, where they sit near him and receive the revelation secrets of his promises. There is a secret place reserved for the lovers of God where they sit near him and receive the revelation secrets of his promises. Jesus says, I'm going to prepare the place. I'm going to prepare that honeymoon room for you. But it gets better because the Hebrew and the Aramaic word for this honeymoon room that the bridegroom is going to build It literally translates as little mansion. In my Father's house are many mansions. Of course there are, because that's where Jesus is, building the honeymoon rooms for you. In my Father's house are many mansions. So, the bridegroom went off to build his mini mansion. And because the betrothal was as binding, in fact, more binding than marriage is for us, from then on, when the bride went out, even though it could be like, you know, 2-3 years until they'd actually get married, she would wear her wedding veil because it symbolized that she was in that relationship. And if any young man was impertinent enough to come up to her, even though she was wearing her wedding veil, according to the Talmud, she was required to cast down her eyes modestly and say to him, I am not my own, for I have been bought with a bride price. See, Paul got that, didn't he? You're not your own. You've been bought with a price. What that means is that you and I are walking around wearing those wedding veils. We're wearing those wedding veils. And they had this great tradition that because nobody knew how long it was going to take for the bridegroom to build his honeymoon room, and when he had built it, his father had to formally approve the work. So if his father came and said, not so happy about that, he would have to redo it, and nothing could go forward until he did. So according to the tradition, if you came up to one of these guys who were building their little mansions, their little honeymoon rooms, and you said to them, so, come on, you've been doing this a while, when's the wedding going to be? He would give the answer, only my father knows. Only my father knows. So, Jesus, when are you going to come back? Of the day and the hour. No one knows, not even the angels. Only my Father in heaven. See, and this stuff would have been immediately recognized by everyone that heard Jesus speak, just as you instantly recognized it as soon as I said, for better, for worse. They understood he was talking the language of marriage. So during this time, the bride would not know when her wedding was going to be, because there's the bridegroom building his mini mansion. Could take 1 year, could take 3 years. But because she didn't know how long it was going to take, and because cultural tradition dictated that Jewish brides were stolen out of their beds in the middle of the nights by their bridegroom, she had to be ready every single night. Now, just kind of let's picture that, how it might look to us. So the first 2-3 months, maybe you shave your legs and paint your toenails and have your glamorous negligee on. And actually, she would have had her wedding veil laid out beside her bed. She would have had the maidens that were going to attend her would sleep in her room. And she would have had her lamp full of oil for the time when the bridegroom came to take her in the middle of the night. But you know, you just kind of have that feeling, don't you, that after 1 year, 2 years, you might not quite just look that great one night. You can imagine you've had a real terrible day. And you're like, nah, it won't be tonight. It won't be tonight. But because Jewish bridegrooms came in the middle of the night without warning to steal their brides away. Whoa. It's getting hot up here. There's a contemporary Jewish proverb that describes it, that the bridegroom comes like a thief in the night. Like a thief in the night. See, and Peter got that, didn't he? Paul got it. They said the day of the Lord is like a thief in the night. They weren't talking about a robber. They were talking about a bridegroom. They're talking about a bridegroom. So the bridegroom would go and ask his father to formally approve the work to his little mansion, and the father would give the go-ahead for the wedding to take place. And at that point, the bridegroom would gather his friends, his bridal party, and they would set out at dead of night to go and steal the bride away. Now, if you were a rich family, the bride's father might pay to have a watchman. And this watchman would position himself halfway between the bride's family, the bride's home, and the bridegroom's home, so that if he saw the bridegroom coming, he would sound a shofar, just so the bride had that few minutes of warning. But see, all this time, all this 2 years or so, the bride's attendants have been sleeping in the room with her. And see, have you ever wondered why those virgins ran out of oil? It's because they thought, well, it won't be tonight, will it? Okay, so the lamp's got a bit dry, but look, it's like 2.5 years and he hasn't come. It won't be tonight. And they heard the cry that said, the bridegroom is coming. So they're like, we need light, we need light, we need oil. And remember how it says at the end of that parable, it says that the door was shut in their faces. That's because when the bridegroom took his bride, he would lead her in all her wedding finery, and she would have the lamp that would light the way, because she'd probably never been to his home. And he would take her towards this honeymoon room. And the bridegroom's family were responsible for filling it with food and wine and good things, making it really comfortable, because they spent the first 7 days and nights of their relationship shut in this room, in their little mansion, because they had probably hardly ever spent any time together. Probably never alone. So these 7 days and nights when the door was shut on them, is a chance for them to learn about each other. Remember when Jesus says you go into the secret place with your Father and you shut the door? That's what he's talking about. He's talking about that place where it's just you and the Father. So they would get there and they would stand under the chuppah. Matt will correct my pronunciation, because that symbolized this whole honeymoon adventure. They still have that in Jewish weddings now, right? And it symbolizes this 7 days and nights they're going to be spent in this covered secret place. So they would get there and they would go in to the little honeymoon room. And it was the job of the bridegroom's best friend, we kind of call him the best man now, but the bridegroom's best friend to shut the door. And he would guard them then to ensure that no one disturbed them during this time of learning about each other. And while the bride and the bridegroom were there in their little room, exploring intimacy, the wedding guests parted for 7 days and seven nights. See, I had always wondered how those people at the wedding feast of Cana ran out of wine. Well, that's why, because they had people partying for 7 days and seven nights. See, we just look what a glory party's like after 3 hours. Imagine if we were going it for 7 days and seven nights. Actually, Matt, that's a really good idea. We so need a 7 day, seven night glory party. And at the end of the 7 days, they would open the door of the little honeymoon room and the bride and the groom would come out and the bride would bring with her the sheet that would be stained with blood. Why? Because it's blood covenant, isn't it? It's blood covenant. Just like Jesus bled on that cross, covenant is sealed in blood. And once they came out, the bride's father would give her her dowry. And the dowry was made up of 10 golden coins, and they were in three rows, 3, 3, 3, and 1. So it would be like a kind of a front piece. And that talked about her change of identity. She was no longer a virgin living in her father's house. She was a wife living under the protection of her husband. And it talked about her status. It talked about her identity. And the richer that her father was, the heavier the gold would be. So you see, when Jesus tells the story of the woman that loses, that has 10 coins and loses one, she wasn't worried because of putting bread on the table for her children. What she was worried about was that she had lost one of the coins out of the wedding necklace, which spoke of her identity and her status and her womanhood. See, because I'd always thought, well, if she lost the coin and she was so distressed, and she was so happy when she found it that she threw a huge party, wouldn't she have spent more than the coin was worth? But of course, it was never about money. It's about identity. It's about identity. So what Jesus is saying was he's given it back. Yeah. The woman that found the coin that was lost talks about the bridegroom, Jesus, restoring identity, restoring womanhood, restoring position. And as the bridegroom led his bride towards the marriage supper, his female relatives would have embroidered a gorgeous banner for him to hold over, which his friends would hold over her. And the bridegroom was expected to choose the words that would appear on the banner. So when Jesus says that he leads us to his banqueting table and his banner over us is love, those were the words that Jesus chose to put on the banner that he, as the bridegroom, is going to hold over us. He chose to write love. In actual fact, it means beloved. The full weight of the Hebrew word is beloved. So you and I will walk to that wedding under a banner that proclaims us as beloved, as his beloved. Then the marriage supper would begin. Blessed are those who are called to the marriage supper of the Lamb. That's us. That's us. Jesus, right now in the glory realm, is building those little honeymoon rooms for you and for me. And those 7 days that the bride and the bridegroom spent together in their little honeymoon room, exploring intimacy at every level of their relationship, are called the days of first love. So when Jesus says, hey, look, you've lost your first love, what he's saying is, I want us to get back to that place when it was just you and me with the door shut. You looking at me, me looking at you. Those are the days of first love. Jesus says, I want you to come back to those days of first love. And I know that this is kind of an aside, but I know we have some serious Enoch groupies in the house. And it says, Enoch was not because God took him. And the Hebrew word for took, I shall probably say wrong, but it's yakak. And that is the word that is usually used for a proposal of marriage. See, so what it's actually saying is God proposed marriage to Enoch. Enoch accepted, and God just couldn't bear to be separated from his beloved. God proposed marriage to Enoch. Reading from Ephesians 1 in the Passion Translation. Now the Holy Spirit has stamped and sealed every one of us, guaranteeing the rights of our marriage covenant. He is given to us like an engagement ring. as the first installment of everything that is to come. So when Jesus gives us the Holy Spirit, it's like he's giving us an engagement ring. It's like he's saying, there's a wedding coming. When we're sealed with the Holy Spirit, we're wearing Jesus' wedding ring, Jesus' engagement ring. Jesus says, I want you to come back to the days of first love. Come back to the days of first love when it was just you and me, heart to heart, eye to eye, learning all about each other. There is a private place reserved for the lovers of God, where they sit near him and receive the revelation secrets of his promises. That's what happens. That's what happens in that little honeymoon room when it's just us and him. We receive the revelation secrets of his promises. And this is so yummy, I had to kind of throw it in, really. Song of Songs. I have made up my mind until the darkness disappears and the dawn has fully come. In spite of shadows and fears, I will go to the mountaintop with you. I will climb with you the mountain of suffering love and the hill of burning incense. Yes, I will be your bride. I've made up my mind. I've made up my mind. In spite of shadows and fears, I've made up my mind. I will go to the mountaintop with you. I will be your bride. So right now, just engage with Jesus. Just turn your affections towards him. And we're just going to activate this. So by faith, we're going to step into that little mansion. Where Jesus takes us by the hand, he leads us inside, and the door gets shut. And it's just you and him. His eyes on your eyes on his eyes. Right there. You and Jesus in the place of first love. And in that private place reserved for the lovers of God, we sit near him and we receive the revelation secrets of his promises. So first off, just ask Jesus. Jesus, what revelation secret do you want to whisper to me tonight? What revelation secret do you want to whisper to me tonight? okay, there's someone and he just said to you that you're the most beautiful thing he's ever seen, and straight away you shut down on that and you thought it was your imagination. It wasn't. That's the revelation secret of his promises. And just ask him now, Jesus, is there anything you need to heal in me tonight? So that I can enter into these days of first love with you. Is there anything that you need to heal in me tonight? So that I can enter into these days of first love with you. This may be wounds of past relationships, past disappointment, past betrayal. Isaiah 53 says, surely, and that word surely means confidently, capably, finally, certainly, and forever, he has borne our grief and carried our sorrow. He already owns it because he paid for it. So if there's pain or wounds from hurts of betrayal and disappointment in relationships, not necessarily romantic, but any relationships, just hand that pain over to him right now. Surely he has borne our grief and carried our sorrow. And he just wants to say that he is not a man that he should lie. So if someone has lied to you in the past, you're safe here. You're safe there in the place of first love with him. He won't lie. And then just ask him, Jesus, can I come back to this place of first love with you anytime I want to? Because tonight you've made a pathway. The more you use the pathway, the easier it gets. There is a private place reserved for the lovers of God where they sit near him and receive the revelation secrets of his promises. Anytime, any place, anywhere, you can step into your spirit and be in the place of first love with him. I have made up my mind until the darkness disappears and the dawn has fully come. In spite of shadows and fears, I will go to the mountain top with you. I will climb with you the mountain of suffering love and the hill of burning incense. Yes, I will be your bride. And I never kind of done this before, but I actually feel that if we were to repeat those words out loud, we would be like signing our part of the covenant. We would be accepting that proposal. So I'm just going to read it phrase by phrase. And I have made up my mind. Until the darkness disappears and the dawn has fully come. In spite of shadows and fears, I will go to the mountaintop with you. I will climb with you the mountain of suffering love and the hill of burning incense. Yes. I will be your bride.
With you. I love you. Yes, I.